Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm back, as always, with Allison with a Y.
Hello.
And Allison with an I.
Hey, y'all.
And we are here for our monthly horror catch-up episode where we check in and break down some of the horror things that we've been watching or reading or listening to or otherwise experiencing over the past 4 weeks or so. I guess I'll kick us off today because I have kind of a follow-up project from a recent episode. We recently reviewed Mononoke, the movie Phantom in the Rain, and that's an anime film based on a series that's also on Netflix. And we had different takes on the movie, for sure. I think we were perfectly split. There was one view it, one cue it, and one screw it, I want to say.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. I was the view it. And
shocked. I was the cue it like I always am.
Have you had a screw it yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was Bone Tomahawk your screw it?
No, I don't think so. Maybe it
I think
was.
I screwed Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, I think I cued Bone Tomahawk. I don't know. I'm too much of a Libra rising.
I was going to say, are you a Libra? Yeah.
Gotta balance them scales. Just like the medicine seller in Mononoke when he gets out his little wing thing that shows how close the spirits are to the human world. I think, you know, even though we had different opinions on this, we all agreed that it had a really unique visual style and very unique concept to it. And as the view it person for Mononoke, the movie, I was like, I got to see what the rest of this is about. So I've watched not quite the whole series. It's short. It's only 12 episodes. But I think I've watched about 9 episodes. And delightful, fascinating, horrifying, gorgeous art, just like the movie. You can tell that they had a little less budget to work with. There's a little more corner cutting on the animation, but for the most part, it is still stunning, still has that very textural look that Allison with a Y referred to, and we talked about the movie, where you really have the sense of seeing something that was made on physical paper that's like a little wrinkled. And I'm not sure if this actually is physical animation or done in a computer primarily. But it has that wonderful handmade aesthetic to it. And usually 2 or 3 episode arcs where our friend the medicine seller is just investigating weird goings on and trying to figure out why a Mononoke or spirit might be causing trouble for people in the real world. And the series gets into heavy-ass topics. Like, imagine a truly taboo topic, and it winds up going there. The resolution to each of these episodes, I can never quite predict what is actually going to happen, and I wind up being shocked or moved or both by whatever is actually going on in the episode. And such interesting use of visuals. There's almost a different visual style to every episode. There was one I was watching recently where there's a lot to do with smell in the episode. And we talked about like the weird ways that Mononoke, the movie, represented intangible ideas like smells. And in this episode, these guys are sitting around doing a perfume. They're like smelling different incenses and trying to prove their sort of prowess at identifying different incenses. And the animation in this episode is primarily black and white, but when they smell things and take in a scent, they all of a sudden become colorful as they smell the scent.
That's lovely.
And so it's just these really inventive and beautiful visual concepts that they introduce in each episode. And I've really been enjoying it and enjoying the little mysteries and the horrifying unsettling surprises that pop up along the way. So I'm glad that I dug into that, and it makes me extra excited for the two more movies that they're supposed to do following up on the one that we watched for the show. So if you're in anime, if you enjoyed Mononoke, the movie, definitely check out the series. It's just as rich, if not more so at times, than the movie. But I know that Allison with an I and I have also been watching, along with, you know, much of America, Max's The Last of Us season 2. And at the time of recording, we are traumatized by the events of episode 2, which in our current timeline, at time of recording, was last night. And we are about to get into spoilers for that episode because it's impossible not to discuss shocking events of this episode. So if somehow you have not been online since that episode dropped and you don't want it spoiled for you, scrub ahead 5 minutes. Hey, quick note from the editor here. If you want to skip spoilers for The Last of Us, you're actually going to want to scrub ahead a lot more than 5 minutes, because we talked about this for way longer than we expected to. So the actual duration of The Last of Us spoiler conversation is 14 minutes, 17 seconds after this message ends. Or if you want to be lazy about it, just scrub ahead 14 minutes, 30 seconds, or 15 minutes, you know, round up if you want to. But 5 minutes is going to put you very much in spoiler territory. So, word to the wise. Okay, back to the program. Joel dies. which I was well prepared for because I had played the game, and so far the show has been very faithful to the game. But how you doing, Allison with an I?
So I too knew that Joel was going to die because an ex of mine played The Last of Us Part 1 and 2 and raved like best video game they've ever played. And I think that that was shared consensus among a lot of the gamers who have played a lot of video games. I heard from a ton of people online and in person that it was the best, most beautiful video game they've ever played. So I kind of knew, what the setup for season 2 was. And then somebody online spoiled it for me and said, well, tomorrow, meaning like Saturday, it's Easter, it's 420. Are we going to enact the Insurrection Act and Joel's going to die? And I was like, fuck you. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know that was going to happen episode 2.
Damn.
So I was like, man, that sucks. So I did go into the episode waiting for that to happen, but I had no idea how it was going to play out because I had never played the video game. So you kind of knew, like, even what the set was going to look like, right?
Yeah. The set, the the murder weapon, it's all very, very similar. I was saying to Allison with a Y earlier today, the main change, I think, is the violence is a little less brutal and graphic than in the video game, which I think is a good choice. Allison with a Y just noped out of this season entirely.
Yeah, Patrick told me the spoilers a while ago. Well, he asked me ahead of time, for the record. He wasn't just like, fuck you, here's the spoilers. and I was like, yeah, I want to hear the spoilers because I want to know what to be prepared for. And he told me, and I remember even back then after that conversation being immediately like, well, I guess I'm not watching the second season because I can't emotionally handle that.
Because you loved the first season, right?
I loved the first season, yeah.
You knew that Joel was going to die early into season 2. I feel like, personally, and I'd love to hear your take on this, Patrick, having had to wait so long between season 1 and season 2, and then only having one episode where we get reunited with these characters and recommitted to them, it felt like I didn't have enough of a connection again to Joel to feel as impacted by his death as I would have if there was some momentum still. Like, it really did lose some momentum for me.
That is interesting. I don't know. I think with both the game and the show, I was still kind of riding off the established relationship that I had to that character and the established relationship that I knew Ellie had to that character. And so I don't think I had that same problem, but I understand what you're saying there.
You know what's interesting, though, is when you're playing the game, you're playing as them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
When you're watching the show, you're watching them act.
Yes.
So, like, that has got to trigger some different kind of fucking neural pathway in your brain where you feel like, I'm not just connected to this character. I was this character for the, like, 2 months that I played this game. Right?
100%. And, I mean, that's why I have always said the first game, The Last of Us, is one of the best pieces of storytelling I've ever seen in any medium. And one of the main reasons is he makes a decision at the end of that that is frankly morally reprehensible, but also probably none of us could say we wouldn't at the very least strongly consider doing the same thing.
I completely empathize with it in his position.
And
we're talking about the decision to lie to Ellie about the cure and the fireflies.
Well, about to basically just do what he, lie about doing what he did. I mean, I empathize with him doing what he did.
And I think why it works so well in video game form originally was because you've played as him for so long and you do have that sense of connection where it's there's that sense of identification with the character, and you can watch the show and I think still feel a high level of identification, but it plays on that relationship that you have to the avatar that you're controlling in a video game where it's like, it is a cutscene. You don't have control over that moment in the game,
right?
But it's like, what the fuck else would you have done? It's
right.
It's incredible. And the second game does some really interesting stuff as far as empathy building. I don't want to dig too much into that, honestly, for like Allison with an Eye's sake, as much as anything, just so that you have a pure experience with the rest of the show.
Yeah,
but I'm curious, I guess, sort of along those lines, how you've reacted to Abby so far, which for context, I guess if people listening are curious but also haven't experienced this in game or TV fashion, this is the new antagonist who kills Joel because Joel killed her dad.
So I fucking hate Abby. I fucking hate her.
Okay.
Like, and not Caitlin Dever. Love her.
She's great.
Abby, hate her. Which means the character was written well and it's being acted well, right? Mm-hmm. She's doing her job. But I will say, to stew on that grudge for 5 years and to not get any more context, to not gather any more context for why Joel had to do what he had to do by killing her dad, which was a split-second decision. I mean, that scene in the last season of The Last of Us, which is now what Abby is seeking revenge for, her father's death, was what Patrick was referring to, you know, like reprehensible, but understandable. And I think it bums me out that this is becoming like revenge porn a little bit. Not my choice, and I'm going to see this all the way through and love every second of it, but bummer on you, Abby, because what did you expect? They were about to kill the only known person with immunity immediately, not by testing her skin, her saliva, none of that. They were going right for the brain. I can't see anyone being that short-sighted. I also have no idea how I would feel if I were in her position. But at this moment right now, I fucking hate her. And I was also really frustrated that Joel didn't try harder to explain himself while they had him captured. Like, I don't know what he could have said in a room full of her people and her just being completely one-track mind about getting her vengeance. But man, Joel has gotten out of some real sticky situations in season one that we didn't think he was going to get out of. And I was surprised that he didn't, I don't know, try harder.
Well, so I think Joel is haunted by his own decision. I think Joel essentially thinks he made the wrong decision. I think when you boil it down, I don't think that character thinks he could have made a different decision, but I think he also has an incredible sense of moral weight and
he's got the shame. He's got a lot of shame.
And that this hell that they all continue to live in, that not even to some degree, but a very, very large degree, he may be responsible for it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a large, large degree to which he's just like, you're right, and I have this coming.
Oh, but does he have it coming? Like, this will forever be the argument, right?
Yeah.
Like,
no, and I mean, that's why it's brilliant. It's a brilliant story because it grapples with incredibly complex and difficult and just who can really make the right decision.
Situations where there's no good answer.
Yeah. It's an incredible study of morality. And when you mention revenge porn, revenge is very much the theme of the rest of the season, and unpacking what revenge does to you and the motivation behind it and how empathy changes revenge. And I'm very interested to see how they handle the rest of the game. It looks like they're breaking it up over two seasons, which makes sense in some ways based on how the game goes. And I appreciate what the second game was trying to do. I don't think it was entirely successful. And I do think the showrunners are very smart and know what they're doing. And I'm curious to see if they kind of honestly improve upon the game, because where the first game to me is perfect, the second game was messy. And my dream or my hope would be to see them kind of salvage the second game a little bit, because it does get messy.
Interesting. I'm sure that, you know, you asked me how I feel about Abby. And again, it goes back to, like, it's my understanding that as the game player, you play as Abby for a lot of the second game, and you get a lot of her backstory. And I'm expecting that we will get a lot more of her backstory. I don't know, for me personally, if it's going to induce a feeling that's stronger than just my detest for her. I think I will have more compassion, but I'm still really, really sad about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mostly because of Ellie. It's like she said, you know, in an episode, everyone that I love has either left me or died. And Joel didn't want to fucking die, and he didn't want to leave her. And this girl, you know, she's a good fucking kid. And she's got, but she's pissed off, man. This season, she started pissed off. The hardest thing for me, and this goes back to like losing my own dad, is that he died while they were fighting. They didn't have any sort of rekindlance or like repair of their relationship. And like, I could seriously cry just thinking about that, because that is like such heavy, heavy, real life, relatable experiences for those of us who have lost a parent and have inherently had a complicated relationship with them. But having played as Abby, what is your take on her, like the personification of her so far?
I think Caitlin Dever is doing an incredible job so far. They went with a very different physical type for the character, because in the game, Abby is a fucking tank. She's like ripped, broad-shouldered, like just a huge character. And Caitlin Dever is like a tiny woman, like maybe tinier even than Bella Ramsey, who is a tiny person as well. But god damn, is she acting up a storm. Like literally in the first, her first scene, it was just shit. Like the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and she's incredible. I think she's fit in very well already just in the two episodes that she's been in. And I'm curious to see what she does with the rest of the material. But she's fantastic.
Yeah, because it's going to be the Abby Ellie story now.
Yep.
Essentially, right? And like Dina.
And Dina,
And Tommy. And Tommy. Like, I really do hope that Joel dying doesn't deter. I'm sure that some people are maybe going to stop watching the show because he died. And like, that right there, it's like, well, then it wasn't for you. I'm personally not going to. I can't wait to see what happens. But I think that his death, for people that haven't watched the played the video game and have no context other than the show, are going to drop off because Pedro's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, as somebody who has decided to not watch now two shows because knowing that Pedro Pascal's character was about to die, I fully support those people.
I am also, I guess, I don't know, it feels weird to use the word excited, but I'm looking forward to the episode where the Joel Ellie beef is revealed, because it's a big flashback sequence in the game, and I'm sure it will be a big flashback, probably whole episode of the show. And I actually don't remember the substance of that. I think the nut of it is she finds out.
Yeah.
But
that would have to be it.
But I think there's also more to it than that. And I'm blanking a little bit on what it is. And I think I'm actually just not going to remind myself so that it can surprise me a little when it happens on the show.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't know that there was a reveal. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because we've all been making assumptions that she intuitively knew that he had lied to her and that he didn't give her like agency to make her own decision. And that would piss off, you know, any person that has, you know, agency.
Yep.
One thing I will say before we move on to our other catch up is Catherine O'Hara. Oh my God. I was so delighted when she showed up, and I was so delighted that she's the fucking therapist.
I was just about to bring her up as well. She killed it. Like, holy shit. That scene was intense. I felt like she was staring right into my fucking soul.
100%.
And the way they shoot it too, like extreme close up with her looking directly into the camera, was insane.
She's perfect.
Yeah.
She is perfect. One other thing I will say, sorry, I keep saying that, is holy shit, the clickers, the stalkers, the bloaters, we got so much of them already this season, and I am pumped about it.
Oh, yeah, and the big, thick, zaddy zombie that everybody was obsessed with and, like, crushing on in the first season came back already. And I'm like, okay, y'all knew what you were doing here, having the thick one come back.
I think some people had complained that there weren't enough clicker zombies. Like, there wasn't enough zombie content in the first one. So I love that HBO was like, fucking here you go. You get a ton of it.
You want your goddamn zombies. Here they are.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say about this show is fucking Max did a push notification last night, like right after the episode came out, that said, did that just happen? And I hate it.
I saw that.
So fucking much. I hate it so fucking much. Like, just let the conversation happen. Don't give people a fucking push notification basically telling them that something shocking happened on the show tonight.
Gross.
Fuck that.
Fuck you, Max.
Fuck you, Max. You.
Stop killing Pedro Pascal in grotesque ways.
Allison, with an eye, I know you've also been watching another very popular streaming horror sci-fi show that I haven't checked out at all, the new Black Mirror season. Well, I mean, I've seen a lot of Black Mirror, just not the new season. How have you been feeling about that so far?
So, you know, every one of them is different. So it's hard to say, like, how I'm feeling about the whole series, because the beauty of this is everyone is such an interesting, crazy storyline. Like, these writers for these shows are some of the most gifted, brilliant minds that are also dark minds, because so much of the stuff that's happened in both previous seasons of Black Mirror and this current season of Black Mirror, you're like, that's going to happen. Like, stop speaking it into existence.
Yeah.
So that being said, I've watched two episodes of Black Mirror, the first episode called Common People. And I think this was absolutely the worst episode to start with, because it made me want to fucking die.
Oh, no.
And I will say, Patrick, I think knowing you can handle this. And I don't mean this in a patronizing way, Allison with a Y, but I would not recommend watching this. It is so bleak.
No, patronizing. I don't know. Yeah, thank you.
I've just started to understand you more as a viewer. And, like, it is one of the most bleak episodes of anything, of piece of writing that I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I was fucking bummed out for the next 3 days. It wasn't like my favorite feel bad feeling. It just felt bad.
Yeah.
Give us a quick premise.
It's called Common People. Chris O'Dowd, Rashida Jones, could not love them more. Mm. They play this couple that you're just like, may that kind of love find me in every lifetime. They adore each other, which makes it, you know, you fucking hate when that happens, because you're like, oh, God, bad shit's going to happen to them. God forbid two people be happy.
Yeah. Like, okay, if I ever find real love, it's going to end tragically and way too soon.
It's going to end in the worst possible way. So basically the synopsis is, when a teacher is left fighting for her life, her doting husband signs her up for a high-tech system that keeps her alive but at a cost.
Oh, no.
So essentially what this episode does is takes the worst part of capitalism and the worst parts of, like, how we're being dicked by these, like, subscription services and plays it out in a way that someone's life is quite literally on the line if they don't play by the rules of this capitalistic subscription service that's keeping her alive.
I just got chills thinking about that. I want to watch this as soon as possible.
Yeah, no.
It is so fucked up. Patrick, watch it and then text me about it, because you're going to be like, I want to die.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody had told me, like, an order to watch these in, and I was like, I'm not going to fucking remember that. I'm just going to watch the first one, and then I'm going to maybe watch another one that was recommended. Oh, my God. It was, what a way to start this season.
Mm. Do they at least play the Pulp song Common People in it?
They don't.
That's fucked up. What a choice.
They do not.
That's a terrible choice.
Someone fucked up.
I hadn't thought about that, but I don't think they do. There's nothing redeeming or great about this episode. It's just fucking sad. And it's sad because it's one of those things that, like, a lot of this Black Mirror stuff, some of it's a lot more far-fetched, but, like, I could see this happening. This might actually be our reality in 50 years.
That sounds sadder than the episode, which fucking bummed me out and makes me sad to this day with Donald Gleason and how...
Be right back, I think.
Yeah, and he plays... He's basically an AI mannequin of her dead.
Oh, her husband.
Oh,
it's worse than that. It's
No.
Yeah, that was one of the sadder episodes. It's so much worse than that. So, like, to our listeners, if you haven't seen it, you know, take heed with what I'm telling you. It is really, really, really sad. And if you're already feeling bad about the state of the world and like being a slave to capitalism. Just give it, watch it in like 4 years if we're all still around. God willing.
And we said we weren't going to talk about the horror that we've been experiencing in real life on this episode.
How can we not, though?
How can we not?
You know, and Black Mirror just does such a good job of, like, even though the irony of it that it's streaming on Netflix, which, you know, I mean, come on. It just gives a big fuck you to things like Netflix that have subscription services. No one's life is depending on them, but people's entertainment is, their livelihood, you know, I mean, whatever, you know. So that was a whole thing. The next episode I watched was very, very different and actually very, very fucking cool. It was called Plaything. This is a lot of people's favorite episode of this season. And there are – you want to talk about nerds, like – get on Reddit, go to Black Mirror subreddit and type in Plaything. And oh my God, people have like typed out. Okay, so here's the synopsis. In a near future London, an eccentric murder suspect is linked to an unusual video game from the 90s, which hosts a society of digital life forms. This shit was wackadoodle in the best kind of way.
Okay.
The best kind of way. Would recommend. Why? I think you'll really like this.
Okay.
So... I mean, people have nerded out to the point of like typing out the same code that this guy was typing. He's a video game designer. He gets caught up in a video game early on in his life that like takes over his whole entire world. He's also on this like near constant acid trip because once he does acid for the first time, he starts playing this video game that he has stolen. There's a story there. And feels like he can communicate with the digital life forms and that they're speaking to him, that they're speaking to him and they're giving him like societal hacks onto how to like create class consciousness and like bring everyone together. Huh. So that's sort of as much as I want to say about it without giving too much away. But this episode was a total mind trip. It was absolutely brilliant. The acting was fucking incredible. Would recommend. Maybe start with that one. Just don't start with the first one. I haven't seen the other ones, but don't start with the first one.
This is good because I've watched most of Black Mirror that's come out so far, and I've really enjoyed a lot of it. But I think I had also gotten to a point where I was like, I don't really need any more of this. But hearing your synopses of both of these, I'm like, okay, I'm in. I need to check out this new season. I'm also excited to see the USS Callister follow-up, because that was a really fun episode.
Oh, they made a follow-up to that?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it stars Kristen Milioti, who was fucking incredible in The Penguin. I know you didn't see that. Why? Did you see The Penguin, Eye?
No. Nor have I seen the first episode that you're referring to of Black Mirror. I haven't seen the first one.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. If you get to that part in the new season, like watch the original episode first. Yeah. Probably good context. But she's incredible, so I'm excited to see that one. So
she's exactly who I thought she was. Okay, great.
Yeah, she's been in stuff.
She was in 30 Rock.
Oh, right. Yeah, who was she?
She plays the writer that like is that really annoys Liz Lemon because she's doing the whole like little baby doll voice. Wow. And it turns out she was actually like in witness protection or some shit.
Wow, that's wild. I had not connected those dots before. Shit.
So last little fun fact on the episode I just talked about, the video game episode, Netflix came out with a video game. That you can play, which is called Black Mirror Thronglets. So the Thronglets are these little creatures that are in the video game that this guy gets acid tripped out and thinks he can communicate with. But Black Mirror went a step further and created a video game that is the same as the video game he's playing. So there's a little added like cool bonus there. Yeah. I haven't played the video game. I think it would be fun to check it out. anyway.
That would be fun.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, Allison, with a Y, I know you have a report to file from a film festival here in our little town of Ypsilanti, Michigan, which I was absolutely crushed to not be able to go to this program that you went to because I had the itis.
Because your body betrayed itself.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So one of the programs for the film festival was a horror short film program called The Body Betrays Itself. And I went with Dr. Katie and then also happened to meet up with Chris, old co-host Chris.
Big ol' Amon reunion.
And the three of us had a great time watching these short horror films together. They, based on the name, you can probably assume that they were more body horror. And there wasn't a single one that I didn't enjoy. They picked really strong ones. But I do want to specifically talk about three of them that were part of the program. So the first one would be Stuck by Giselle Mounia. It was the premise. It's a very simple premise. A man gets stuck in a sex doll. And I don't think short and sweet is quite the right term to describe this. But it's short and a wild ride. You know, you find out that he's somebody who has a sex doll. He gets his rocks off in it, and then he gets stuck. He tries to get it removed at a hospital, and I mean, you literally see him like walking around in his normal clothes with this sex doll stuck to him. And it's like a real doll sex doll. Like, it's like one of the fleshy kinds.
Anatomically correct.
Yeah, anatomically correct. Oh my God, the toes of the doll kept really bothering me because they kept wiggling. No. And I did not like that at all, out of all the things. And then finally, like the last little bit of it, he sees this old man wheeling by in a wheelchair who also has a sex doll stuck to him. And you don't know if he's seeing another man or if he's kind of like seeing himself in the future. Ooh. And then he decides to rip the sex doll off of him, and it's clear that another part of him was ripped off in the process. And it was short, it was hilarious. I mean, the whole theater, we were roaring with laughter at it. It was great. So that was Stuck by Giselle Mounia. I can't find anywhere that you can view it online, but hopefully someday you get the joy of seeing it like I did. The second one that I really, really stuck with me was called Belly Belly by, I think, Gabrielle Carnick. It's like a queer body horror, and it's about these two assigned female at birth people who meet for a sushi date, and they're talking about all the ways that they've kind of like restricted themselves with their food to get to their perfect bodies. And they're talking about, like, you know, all the things that they've done. Cause they're both like, oh my God, you look good. Oh my God, you look good. And they're like stuffing their face with all of the sushi and like making these horrifying sounds all while aggressively talking about like all of their restrictions, all of their, you know, dieting, all of their exercise and all of that. And it's this really interesting play on like body dysmorphia and the shame talk that you have, because they're like, oh, but you know, we can treat ourselves, but it's beyond binging. And it was so relatable as somebody who's been socialized, certainly as a woman in this world, and all of the horrible self-talk, even if it doesn't feel inherent to you, you feel like you have to kind of adopt because, you know, that's how everybody else is talking about their bodies and all the restriction and stuff like that. And even though I'm somebody who I think I've been fairly safe from that, I'm still like, oh no, I recognize some of this. Like, it's funny, a lot of it. It doesn't feel that heavy in the moment. But it's also like, I left and I was like, I'm laughing, but also I recognize a lot of this self-talk. And but it was funny because Dr. Katie and I, we looked at each other afterwards and we're like, we could really go for sushi. Despite all of that. That one was great. I also can't find that anywhere online currently, but hopefully you can check that out at some point. It's called Belly Belly by Gabrielle Carnick. And then the last one I want to talk about, good news is you can find it online. And I'm so glad because I want so many people to see this. So I won't I won't do any spoilers with this one, but it's called A Fermenting Woman by Priscilla Galvez. And it is about this chef, and she's clearly a very prestigious chef, and she loves to ferment things. So she has all of these jars and stuff in her home and in her kitchen, and she's working on all these projects, and she needs to create the perfect dish to keep, I think, some investors invested in her restaurant. And she uses an unusual body-related ingredient for her, you know, pièce de la résistance. Oh my God, whoever was the Foley artist for this was a genius, because when I think of the film, I think of the sounds. Mm. Like, they must have had so much fun with all the squelching and the squishing and the slopping and the chewing. And there's this scene where, like, the people are eating and it is visceral and disgusting, but also, like, full of their like, pleasure, too. And it's, like, it's a very, like, sensory short film, and I think it was absolute genius, and I think you need to look it up. It's so good. I want so many people to see that. And once again, that's called A Fermenting Woman by Priscilla Galvez. That one, it's like, it's not the shortest of the horror films. It was like a little over 20 minutes, but it told a really good story. Look it up. I highly recommend it, and let us know what you think about that one if you do watch it, because I absolutely adored it. And Patrick couldn't go, but I immediately was like, oh my God, I'm so sad Patrick wasn't here, because he would have loved this.
Well, we found it online, so I'm going to watch it as soon as possible, and we're also going to put a link to that in the show notes. I was thinking about this when you were talking about Belly Belly, but I love the horror of eating.
Yes.
I love good sound design in a horror movie, and I love to eat. Fucking foodie, but also eating is kind of inherently gross, and yes. I love when the grossness of eating is exploited in a horror movie, especially with great sound design. So I'm excited to watch A Fermenting Woman. I'm actually thinking, did you see The Substance?
I still have not seen The Substance. Oh, okay. I know.
There's lots of great horrifying shit in The Substance, but I don't think there's anything quite as horrifying as a scene where Dennis Quaid is just eating shrimp in the most disgusting way possible.
Katie literally said the same thing after watching A Fermenting Woman.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, I'm going to close out this round of horror catch-up with another little dispatch from actually the same film festival. This film festival, the Independent Film Festival Ypsilanti, here in our city that's near Ann Arbor in Detroit, for those of you not familiar with Michigan's geography, has a 26-hour filmmaking competition every year where folks are given a couple of prompts and then they have 26 hours to make a movie. And one of the contestants in that competition this year was our dear friend and former co-host, Chris. He made a movie called There's Something in the Water, and he fucking won.
He won! Woo!
There were, I think, 12 or 13 different shorts in competition, folks who completed the challenge, and he took the top prize. He made a really fun movie about a couple of folks who are out fishing and are menaced by something in the water. So I'm going to leave a link to that in the show notes as well, in case you want to see what Chris has been up to since he left the show. You know, he said he wanted to make space for more creative projects in his life, and he wasn't, for the first time in his life, maybe wasn't just full of shit. He actually left the show and made a goddamn film. And
it's proud of you, Chris.
It's a fun one. So
yeah, go
out.
Chris. We're go proud Chris. Of you, man.
We love you. All right, well, I think that will wrap up another installment of Horror Catch-Up. But before we go, we have to figure out what we're watching for next episode. And it is Allison with a Y's turn to pick a movie. So what are we watching?
So I've held off a couple times on picking this movie, but I will hold off no longer We are going to watch The Dead Don't Die.
Oh, good, because I was going to pick that next, so I'm glad you got it out of the way, and now I can come up with something else.
I was like, I can't possibly risk it like going off of Netflix before I pick it, so I'm going to do it. I wanted to see this back when it came out. I never did. So the Netflix description is, a celestial event raises the dead in the placid town of Centerville, where the police chief and his deputy struggle to keep things under control.
And I'm fascinated to see this because it's directed by Jim Jarmusch, who's one of my all-time favorite directors. It's got Adam Driver. It's got Bill Murray. It's got a cast to fucking die for.
Tilda Swinton.
This cast is insane.
Right?
Tilda Swinton. And Tom fucking Waits.
Yes.
And the reviews for it were terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I cannot imagine really how you could fuck this up. Like,
54% on Rotten Tomatoes, in fact.
It's hard for me to imagine how this could be bad. And I'm hoping that I am an outlier. I'm hoping that I'm one of the 54% who's like, no, this fucking ruled. So I'm excited to watch this.
Well, I guess none of us have seen it then, because I have not seen it, and it's been on my list. So, well done. Why? Yay.
So we will watch, review, and discuss The Dead Don't Die on the next episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix. Until then, visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. You can find a list of all our episodes out there, as well as our merch store, which has t-shirts and other goodies in it with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on them. And find us on social media. We're at Amoncast, EHMONcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky, and Amon Podcast on TikTok. Also, join us on Discord. We have a lovely community of fans from around the world who discuss the movies that we watch for the show, as well as all kinds of other horror stuff. We've got a link to that in the show notes. And leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. We love to get the feedback, and it helps people find the show. All right, well, that wraps up, I think it's fair to say, a banger episode of Horror Catch-Up.
Agreed.
Until next time, for Every Horror Movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
Allison with an I.
And I'm Allison with a Y.
We'll see you next time.